Lawrence Baker. I'm here with Terry Telford. We're talking about creating win-win relationships with your customers and subscribers. And Terry has been on the Internet since 2001, and I'm going to let Terry tell you a little bit about his background in general.
Okay.
Go ahead, Terry.
Thanks very much, Lawrence. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to chat with you.
Thank you.
My background is fairly simple. I originally come from the marketing and advertising world. I went through college for advertising, and I graduated in 1991. And since then, I've been in a lot of different jobs. I've had a lot of different companies, but usually everything revolved around sales, marketing, management, kind of everything. I've worked in a paint store. I've worked in a lumber store. I've had my own advertising agency, and to make a long story short, in 2001, I decided to hop online and see where that would lead me. I'd been actually looking at the Internet since 1996, and I'd been playing around a little bit, but never really to the point of doing anything business-wise. It was more just an exploration and see what was out there. But in 2001, I thought, okay, I'm going to take the plunge. I'm just going to quit my job, cold turkey, and I'm going to go online and make my living there. And it was okay, except it takes a lot longer than I had anticipated. It took quite a long time for me to go through my entire learning curve, and of course you're never at the end of the learning curve, but it did take quite some time. It was probably about a year and a half before I actually started making any money.
Yeah.
And of course by that time the savings has disappeared, and getting into debt quite a bit. And I actually, after that point, I had to take on a job and go back to working for someone, which I absolutely hate. But, you have to do what you have to do. And after that, then, I kind of was able to turn things around on my online business,
mm-hmm.
to the point where it was making enough money to start covering the bills and paying off my debts and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But even still today, I'm a consultant for an advertising agency, which allows me the freedom to still work on my own, but I'm still my foot's in the offline world and the online world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can draw from experiences from both sides of the coin.
Great.
So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Well, it's always nice to be able to bring things from the outside, and I mean that's where a lot of new ideas come from. Speaking of which, when you started, I know you were already in advertising, but specifically, what did you bring to the table in the very beginning that allowed you to bring value to your subscribers?
I think probably the biggest thing is I could actually draw on my own experience. I'm in the online advertising, marketing, business, I guess you could say in some respects the business opportunity side of things.
Mm-hmm.
I did have, I guess you could say, a little bit of an advantage over someone who's coming online who has no advertising and marketing experience, because I really have a background from, copywriting and layout and design and that kind of thing, but at the same time, my experience is 10 years old. I mean, it was 2001 when I graduated. So when it came to copywriting and things, I was still very rusty. But I had the marketing, kind of the background was there. And so what I tried to do is to bring the offline experiences that I had online, because I think what I was experiencing anyway at 2000 and 2001 is you go online and you find so much. What I say, I mean, it's basically hype and really to the point of being garbage, where you go online and you pull up these sites that say, we're going to, you just sign up with us and you pay us $50 a month. You don't ever have to work again, and we just pay you these big paychecks. And if that was the actual case, why would they need me? I mean, they need my money to do what? And there was too much of that, and I thought, God, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah,
so what I tried to do – sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's hard to get into the meat of it with all of that going on.
It really is, and that's where I tried to be different and kind of, I guess, be the voice. I tried to be the voice of reason, you could say, and say, look, business online is really no different than business offline. It's just a whole heck of a lot cheaper to set up a company
mm-hmm.
and run your business. So that's where my standpoint was. I try to bring kind of reality to the people who are trying to come out and do business, because a lot of the time what people would do is come out and they would get online and see all this hype and think, wow, this is great. You know, I can make, you know, $10,000 by next week and I'll have all my bills paid off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they come in and you pay your $50, and by next week the only thing that's happened is you're $50 poorer.
Yep.
So what I tried to do, you know, was really to kind of, I don't know, kind of sound like a downer, but, you know, kind of bring the, burst the bubble and bring people down to reality and say, look, you know, look at your business like a business. It's not just something that you sign up and it's some game that you think you're going to win the lottery, because it just doesn't
mm-hmm.
happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think now I'm seeing a lot more of that where, I think the hype, of course, the hype's always going to be out there. But I think there's a lot more businesses based on reality, that are making it, because the ones that are based on hype don't, you know, pretty much don't last for more than a few months.
Yeah, so, I've kind of gotten that same impression, but that's an important message, and I don't think it gets, I don't think it gets spread enough. You hear it, but people need to hear about, you know, the specifics of, what works and what doesn't, and because, you know, you can tell them it's all hype, but, you know, it's hard to tell the difference when you first get online.
Oh, it is. And I think what happens is you get all excited and you get caught up in the emotions. And a lot of these webmasters are playing on the emotions of the person who comes online and they have the mindset that I'm just going to sign up for something and make myself, you know, fabulously rich just by signing up for something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, by the time, they get on and they've lost, you know, $200-$300 and they're no further ahead, by that time it's they're either worn out, and they say, okay, well, I'm just not going to buy anything else online because it's just all a scam and it's all a ripoff. Or they're to the point where they're looking to educate themselves and say, okay, before I take the next step, let's take one step back and actually learn what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right.
Because a lot of people come online and they don't have any business experience. So, generally people believe what they read. So, you know, the hype can come off as, oh, this is great. I can do this, and it's really simple. But what I really had to do is take a look at myself from a development standpoint and think, okay, well, the positive is I can bring some reality to business or to help people to run their business, and I can help them with the marketing side of things. But on the other side of things, I didn't really have the marketing online aspect. I mean, I could market offline, but when it comes to online, it's a bit of a different ball game.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go through quite a learning curve there before I could actually bring something back to my subscribers that was really of any value. Because I mean, I went through in 2001. I tried everything because I was. It's basically the type of thing where I like to try things myself and experiment and see how they work. And if they work, great. I can tell people about it. Here, you know, Easy Advertising works. I'm running solo ads and they're doing fantastic. You know, I've done FFA sites, and I found out, oh, it doesn't work at all, even in 2001. But, you know, that kind of thing. So I would only bring back the things to the subscribers that they would actually be able to use. But at the same time, I'd also bring them back the information that I was finding out, okay, you know, FFA sites, you know, just don't seem to work, that type of thing. So I come back and let them know, here's what's working for me, here's what's not working for me, here's exactly what I've done. It's not that maybe there's another angle. The things that aren't working for me, maybe there's another angle that, you know, you can find to make this thing work. But for me, here's what I did and here's what didn't work type thing. As well as, you know, of course, here's what I did and here's what worked. But it really boiled down to the fact I was a very poor planner as well. I needed to start planning. And somewhere along the line, I ran into a very, very simple plan which had nothing except the monetary side of things. And it basically said, you know, all you want, just write a simple one-page business plan from the monetary side first, so you know what you want to do. So it takes for a year. Right now I can say, you know, this year I want to make $50,000 or $100,000 or whatever I want to make. And then just divide that by 12 so you know what you have to make in a month. So maybe you want to make $10,000 a month. And then break it down into days. So now you need to make I don't know what that works out to be, whatever it is per day that you need to make. And then you take a look at the marketing side of things and figure out how are you going to actually market your products to make the money that you need to make. But at the same time, building the relationships with your subscribers. So you're not just looking at the money side of things and saying, geez, you know, I want to make $500 a day, so I'm going to sell all this stuff, and it's just a bunch of garbage. Then you basically kind of cut off your nose to spite your face, because maybe people you can trick people into buying things once, but you're not going to be able to trick them into buying things twice. So it really becomes almost common sense. I mean, you want to treat people like you want to be treated yourself, and build a relationship with them and show them, you know, here's what I know, here's what I don't know. And a lot of the times what I find is the subscribers will have the information that I don't have. So if I'm a little bit thin on, right now is a good example. I know nothing about blogs and RSS feeds.
Mm-hmm.
It's the hottest thing you can talk about in marketing right now, and I haven't got into that yet because I'm still working in my set kind of parameters. Of course, I have to look at, you know, what are they? I know what they are and whatnot, but I haven't looked at how do they actually work. So now my subscribers come back and say, look, you know, here's what a blog is, here's how it works. You know, it gets you on the search engines and all that kind of stuff. So they actually can help me fill in the gaps where I'm weak.
That's great.
So it's really building, you know, it's back to the relationship thing. I mean, that's if there's one thing that you have to do in business, doesn't matter if it's online or offline, it's really to build the relationships with your customers and with your prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I guess another thing, for me it was kind of a simple thing is the writing. You know, we're talking about kind of things that I had to develop.
Yeah.
From the writing side, you know, everything we do online is writing.
Yep.
So if somebody's not comfortable with writing, that's the first thing you need to do is either you're going to have to hire yourself a good copywriter or you're going to need to learn something about writing copy. And it wasn't just a piece of cake for me as either because my writing is from the advertising side. So I can write copy for advertising and sell the sizzle. One of our expressions in advertising is sell the sizzle, not the steak.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you're developing a relationship with people, you're not just selling all the sizzle. You're actually going to talk about the steak.
Yeah.
So you're going to need to know all the different cuts of meat and all exactly everything about steak so that you can share, you know, the steak side of it as well as the sizzle.
Mm-hmm.
So I really had to develop almost a partly journalistic approach to providing information because I was much too sales. You know, kind of the sales approach for me. So I really had to start now kind of almost blending it so that I become journalistic, but kind of journalistic that is able to sell at the same time. So that was that's pretty much, I guess, the kind of the areas that I really had to work on.
And so lately you've just gotten more into actually talking about the online stuff in specific. You know, one of the things I mention in my book is that, you know, getting started, you kind of have an opportunity where, you know, it's hard to get truthful information out there, at least in internet marketing. And I think, you know, in anything where there's, where it's sales driven, you can kind of go in there and be people's guide, you know, without having to be the expert. You know, you can kind of be their watchdog.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people on the internet when when they get started, but the sales approach, you know, the sell the sizzle approach, you kind of have to do that to get people in. A lot of times on the internet because, you know, there's just so much competition. But then, you know, it becomes different when they become your subscribers. But I think a lot of people continue with that style. And, I think it must work or they don't, you know, they wouldn't be doing it. But, you know, it's a real turnoff to most people, and I don't think that it leads to a lot of repeat business. You know, What are your thoughts on that? Because I think people need to understand why it is that marketers do what they do in order to get past that. You know, they'll sell you. You know, it's just one big sales pitch. They'll sell you one thing after another, and the objective is to make as many sales as possible on everything they sell. And it doesn't matter who you are, they want to sell you, you know. Rather than saying, this is a good product for such and such people, and go out, you know, and qualify what you're selling so that the right products end up in the right hands.
Yep.
And, you know, and that's how you're going to get repeat business, because, you know, that's hard to find, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Why is it? What do you think that a lot of them continue to operate as? You know, they continue to churn out the hype.
I think what happens is people get online and they read these kind of, I guess you could say, hyped up news, you know, kind of sales letters, or a little bit maybe over exaggerated sales letters.
Mm-hmm.
But what they really, I mean, you've got to kind of find the people who are the, I don't like the word gurus. I think that's a silly thing to call people, especially after you've only been online for, you know, a few years, and just because you actually run a business online, you're suddenly a guru. But the people who actually are very solid people, like Joe Vitale, for example.
Yeah.
Joe really looks at the psychological aspect of selling, and I think that's super important, that if people can actually, you know, get past the point of just kind of on the surface fluffiness and really look at what makes people buy, you know, and what can you say that kind of pushes their hot buttons. That way you're going to actually be able to write less hype but get more response. But you can't, I think what happened is people have gone over the line and you know, kind of overhyped and become a little bit almost to the point of being silly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and making these absolutely wild claims about, you know, you do, you know, you sign up today and, you know, a month later you're going to be making $10,000. Sometimes it's going to happen. Sometimes it actually does happen. I have a story from a business that I was in was a couple of years ago. It was a network marketing business. And we had one distributor came on brand new, signed up, and within 6 weeks he made $13,000. And the whole thing is that the story is, or the actual fact is that that's exactly what happened. He signed up. 6 weeks later, he was making $13,000. And it was one of these amazing success stories that, of course, you know, the company uses that as almost as the front page. You know, look, you know, $13,000 a month, your paycheck's coming in. This is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always the type of, you have to look behind the scenes and what actually happened.
Right.
And the whole story is, this guy was in business for ages and ages, and he had his own direct mail company. So all he did was went through his list, pulled out the opportunity seekers who he's already got a relationship with, sent them out a 26-page letter, which is actually it was offline. It was done by snail mail, and just from there he got people, a whole whack of people to sign up, and he made $13,000. So there's a basis, a lot of the times there's a basis to the hype, but it's so blown out of proportion that if you don't look behind the scenes to see what actually happened, you know, you kind of take it at face value and you think, wow, if he did it, I can do it. Well, most of the time there's a lot more to the story. You can't just do it like that.
Right.
So I think that's where a lot of the hype originates from and where it comes from. But I think it's exactly like you said, Lawrence, as a respectable business person, you have to look at the person who you're serving and building the relationship and not simply sell them something for the sake of selling something, maybe to the wrong person. I mean, if you come on to my site and, you know, I say, look, here's what I'm offering, this fantastic ebook, you've got to buy it if you want to be successful online. And then I come on and tell you, you know, you buy the ebook and then you discover that it's about how to raise a cat. you know, that's you know, it doesn't you know, the end doesn't justify the means.
Yep.
I mean, that's a bit of a silly example, but that's the type of thing. You know, you can sell people once, but I mean, you can't keep selling them over and over, and you're not going to build a relationship, which is the most important part of the sales aspect. You know, by doing stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, there are other businesses that are going to do that, and I think they're always going to do that.
Yeah.
But I mean, you really, that's not the kind of person that you want to be. I mean, I think the funny thing I find is a lot of businesses, even if it's done on a lower key, you know, a lot of businesses are running around marketing here and there and trying to find new customers. They're always trying to find new customers. And as soon as somebody buys something, they almost avoid them like a plague, so that they
mm-hmm.
don't actually build a relationship with the customer. They're almost alienated. You buy something from this person, you never hear from them again.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's from a business standpoint. I mean, that's where the big money is. Your customer's already
yeah.
shown you that they trust you. They've already shown you that they're interested in your product, and you know, now they've actually purchased. They've taken out their credit card and shown you that they trust you enough to buy your product. Most likely they're going to read the product, and then now is the perfect time to say, okay, now I've got, you know, this other product that you might be interested in.
Yeah.
And really, not just from the standpoint of making the sales, of course, I mean, the sales are a very nice part of it, but from the standpoint that, you know, you're looking to help the customer. You're going to offer them other products that are related to their level of interest or their topic of interest.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I've got somebody... for example, I have an information product on raising cats, for example. I'm not going to try then and sell somebody something on network marketing. Maybe they have an interest, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's too far-fetched, you know, kind of a crossover. I mean, there is crossover. If I've written, a book on animal training, and I have one specifically on cats, one specifically on dogs, and one specifically on hamsters, there could be some crossover. Because maybe somebody who owns a cat knows somebody who owns a dog who might be interested in that kind of thing. But I really wouldn't, you know, try selling something to someone which is totally off topic.
Yeah. Well, even it's a lot more subtle than that. Sometimes where marketers, when they're selling marketing information, they'll sell things that. You know, most of the people on their list probably can't apply. They're just not in a position to do that.
Yeah.
And all the claims that they make are based on the assumption that they're in a position to apply it. I think that's a lot of what goes on, you know, at least within marketing. And it all comes down to it's always cheaper to keep an existing customer than it is to find a new one, and that's been proven over and over, and people still seem to ignore it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's crazy.
I have a real world example of that, and it's really I find it absolutely amazing. I'm working with this author who is a professional network marketer. I mean, this guy is one of the people you hear about that you know, has made millions of dollars and enjoys a fantastic lifestyle from network marketing. And he's written, I don't know how many books, he's written a whole whack of books, probably, I guess, in the range of maybe 20 or so books. And so one day we were just chatting, and I said, well, you know, how many customers do you have? What size is a customer list? And he said, well, he's got, you know, the contact details for over 1,000 people that have bought his books. And I said, oh, that's fantastic. I mean, what kind of marketing do you do to these people? I mean, that's really another, obviously, another avenue of, you know, an income stream.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I don't want to ruin my list.
And
I said, what do you mean you don't want to ruin your list? Well, I haven't contacted them because they bought the book and I don't want to ruin that list. I said, God, I mean, this is sitting on a gold mine. I mean, these are people you know that they're network marketers, that they're interested in network marketing. 99% of the people in network marketing aren't making any money. They're trying to learn how to do it. And this guy's, you know, this guy's got the information. I mean, he's sitting on a gold mine to really develop huge relationships with these people. I mean, the book is just the first step. And
wow, that's funny. Being that he, you know, would be in the business and still not see that.
Yeah, and it's not uncommon.
Mm.
You see it all the time when you start talking to a lot of these people who are even the big successful people. When it's something that's not Like you and I are, you know, being very familiar with marketing and advertising and that type of thing. Mm. It's almost a natural that when you get a customer, you know, that's part of a, there's a person that you're going to be marketing other products to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not that simple for, you know, pet store owners, for example,
mm-hmm.
to think, you know, well, if I can develop a customer list, I can actually, you know, I could do things like use almost like in the network marketing arena where a lot of the companies will use an auto ship type situation. So you, I can't think of, for example, skin cream. If you're selling skin cream, then every month you're going to get a new bottle of skin cream because you usually use it in about 30 days.
Yeah.
Well, if you take that thinking and apply it to, say, a pet shop owner, and you simply, you know, you simply say to the customer when they come in, look, you know, I see that you buy this bag of dog food, you know, every month. Would you like me just to simply send it to you so you don't have to keep coming in? You know, that kind of thing, and develop the relationship further with the customer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a natural thing. People don't automatically see it. You really have to kind of get out there and learn it and look at the marketing side of things.
Yeah. You know, the way people collect these leads, you know, at some point you're starting out, unfortunately, with a bunch of leads for your list and not customers. And, you know, on the Internet, there's lots of ways to get low-quality leads. And it gets to the point where your list, you're spending more time keeping up with, you know, problems and, you know, just managing the whole thing than it's worth in what it is bringing you. Have you found that at all?
Depends on what you would consider using a lot of time. I've done, mm-hmm. I did quite an experiment actually with the co-op registration leads where you buy,
yeah.
You know, you buy 10,000 leads for $400, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, in fact, registered to receive information. The only thing is it's difficult to tell if they've actually registered to receive information, business information, or if they registered for some sort of a contest or, mm-hmm. you know, a lottery or what have you. So I did an experiment where I went and I bought 10,000 of these leads, and I put together a series of autoresponder messages which very gently massaged the business side of things, because I didn't know where these people actually came from. I know they've signed in their legitimate opt-in leads, but I don't know what they've actually opted in for. Theoretically, they're supposed to have opted in to receive business information. So I was very careful and very optimistic, leery. I was a little bit scared because, you know, I was worried about getting spam complaints,
yeah.
But I thought I've got to test it because it's something that I haven't done before. So in this case, it's probably one of the very few times that I actually, you know, do a lot of tracking. But I took and I put them into a set of autoresponders where the very first one was a confirmation message. And it really, very simply, it said, thanks for, I can't remember offhand exactly what it is, but basically the gist of it is thanks for signing up to receive business information with one of our online partners. The first bit of information is this interview that I've done with so-and-so, and here's the information that you're going to get from it. So instead of actually marketing things to them, what I did is got them to sign into my other lists
mm-hmm.
that they might be interested in.
Yeah.
And that way I was able to actually turn kind of the, what you would consider low quality leads,
mm-hmm.
I actually was able to turn them into an income.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was basically, it goes right back to exactly what you said, Lawrence, where you're building the trust in a relationship with the person.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of going out and saying, you know, wow, go out and buy this ebook, this is fantastic, and keep selling, you know, blasting sales messages at them, what I ended up doing is just get them into my other lists. So I actually took this big low quality opt-in list and filtered it or funneled it into my other lists,
mm-hmm.
so that I could actually build a relationship with the people and do it that way. So you know, it did actually work out well, but the response rate is unbelievably small compared to the response rate that you get from a list that you've developed as, you know, subscribers who have specifically subscribed to one of your services.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as manageability, I did it all through an autoresponder, but the way that I use that I have the autoresponder set up is if somebody wants to send me a message, they can simply reply to the message in the autoresponder. And even out of 10,000 people, I didn't have that many replies. I probably spent, I guess probably with that list, I would have spent maybe about 2 hours total over about a month and a half managing that list. So what I've done is actually I use autoresponders pretty much to manage my lists. And, you know, once you get into the list, then the autoresponder takes care of sending the messages on a regular basis. And
yeah,
if somebody wants to, you know, talk to me or write to me or email to me, whatever, back and forth, they just hit the reply, and then, you know, it comes right directly to my inbox. But even I have about, I guess I have about probably 25 or 30 lists that I have right now, but I mean they're fairly small lists. They could be anywhere from about 1,000 to 2,000 people,
mm-hmm.
and you know, even out of that many people and messages going out on autoresponder all the time, I don't have that many customer service issues and you know, and people just wanting to chat.
Yeah.
So you know, I don't find, personally, I don't find it too unmanageable that way.
Okay. So you've kind of set up, when you get those kind of leads, you basically set up a filter where if they don't end up on one of your lists, they just kind of drop off. Is that how it works?
Yeah, kind of. I've set up a series of autoresponders that will go on indefinitely.
Okay.
You know, once they get to, I think right now I probably have about 50 messages in there, and they go out like once a week or something. So I'm set up for a year. And,
okay,
you know, kind of come to the, by the end of the year, I'll put in another 50, that kind of thing. So they can, they're in there and they'll get my messages until they either unsubscribe or set themselves up on another list. And they'll still, unless they unsubscribe to the list, they can stay on there.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, I think one of the important things is that you really try and define or find out what it is that the actual person is interested in. Because lot of the time, I mean, when we talk about, you know, lists and building lists and doing this and that, we kind of lose the sight of or the fact that we're actually, the lists we're building, although all we're seeing is email addresses, these are actually people. Each address is a person. So when we're writing messages or writing, you know, anything to these people, you pretty much have to think about the person, like as if you're sitting across a table, you know, a table or a desk from them, and just sitting down having a conversation. And I think one of the greatest people of doing that, to do that, is Willie Crawford, and he's fantastic. He talks to you in his own words. He says, you know, when he's writing a message, he tries to think like he's sitting down across the table from you, and you're his nephew, and you're trying and he's trying to share information with you to help you. And I think that's probably the best way to describe, you know, a pleasant mindset.
Yeah.
Whenever you're writing to somebody, instead of just writing to your lists, you're writing to, you know, Sam that's sitting across the table from you, and you're telling Sam exactly what you do and how you do it, and how can he do what you're doing to, you know, improve his life, that type of thing. And I find as well, David Vallier is another one that writes with that type of a style as well, where he talks directly to you. I mean, you open the email and you'd swear he was just sitting across the table telling you, here's what I do, that kind of thing. And so I think, I mean, that kind of got a little bit carried away. That goes beyond the how do I manage the lists, but you know, that's the kind of the tone that I use to try and filter people into the lists. That basically my lists are worked. I use autoresponders, so it's very managed, very manageable doing that way. Because the messages that I'm writing, I write them in bulk, so I could sit down and take a day or 2 days and write all the messages for one autoresponder that could last for a year. And that way it's, you know, it's time up front, but it saves a lot of time in the back end.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, that kind of gets into developing trust. I mean, if you can have that trusted advisor relationship with your subscribers and you've identified what it is they want, then, you know, you're home free.
So what you're saying is that you you pretty much just take the personal email type of approach, and they sort of warm up to you as time goes on.
Yeah, I really do it so that when I'm writing the mail, I don't think of writing to a large group of people. I try to write to one person and really kind of picture them in their situation. What are they doing? They're sitting down at the computer right now. You know, maybe the family is in the living room, and they would like to actually develop an income, you know, that would allow them to be in the living room with their family instead of sitting in front of their computer. They're maybe doing, you know, trying to make a second income online, which is nice because they're at home. They don't have to go out and make a, you know, take a second job and do it that way. But they don't want to be sitting in front of their computer. They want to be with their family. So they want to turn it into a full-time job. And maybe I'm writing to that kind of person. Maybe for another message, maybe I'm writing to, you know, a single person, a single mom or a single dad who, you know, the kid's gone to bed, their children or son or daughter, whatever's in bed, and, you know, they want to have the type of lifestyle where they can be at home with their son or daughter.
Yeah.
Another time, maybe, you know, I'm thinking of writing something to an executive who's, you know, they've got, you know, there's no problem with a paycheck. You know, they're making good money, but they have no time. Whereas maybe sometime another message might be to the other person who has lots of time and no money.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends. When I sit down and start writing the messages and talking to people, I really try and put myself in their shoes. And depending on whether I'm offering a resource or I'm selling a product or recommending a product, whatever, I try to think of how is that product or service or recommendation going to fit into their lives.
Yeah.
Where they're sitting right now.
So do you try to actually break up your list with, you know, on one side people that have more time than money and on the other side more money than time?
Yeah, I pretty, I don't know if I get that simple. I pretty much break up my lists by subject matter.
Okay,
so
yeah, of course, right.
I've got for example, I can use a real-life example. I have an interview that I did with Kasper Postowski, who's a very, I don't know, he's a really dynamic person who described exactly how he suddenly discovered a niche market. He developed a product, and now it's actually the one product makes him it's like over $10,000 a month. And we went through the whole process, exactly the process that he went through. And it's something that you can listen to the interview and follow the process step by step and do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the interviews that I promote on the site. So once people get into that autoresponder, then I try to keep the messages on a somewhat of a niche marketing or a niche business side of things, but also I kind of swing back and forth between the niche side of things and general business, because I think anybody who's interested in a niche business is also interested in business in general.
Right.
So in that respect, then I'll you know, I put it into, yeah, I keep it in that context. So I try and keep it within the context of the first download or the first interview or whatever they first came in to listen to. I try to keep the messages within that same context.
You really get the most out of your lead zone, it sounds like.
I try to really, I mean, I can't, I'd be silly to stand here and say that the money isn't nice and the money isn't important, because, I mean, of course, that's bottom line. I mean, you want to make the sales.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the sales are almost a benefit or an afterthought to building a relationship with the people.
Well, yeah, I think it has to, it sort of has to go in that order in order to really develop a relationship. And, you know, one of the other things is, you know, how often do you, how do you send offers to them versus sending them, you know, content? How do you strike that balance?
I actually, I try to send content all the time. that turns into an offer.
Okay.
And the way that I've done it, I can't remember who described it, but it's an absolutely perfect description. Whoever it was said that, you know, they send out sales messages or messages or whatever, they use a slippery slope. And I thought, you know, that really describes it perfectly, because what happens is that at the beginning of the message and throughout the message, it's actually more of an article. You're giving a person valuable information. And it comes, you know, you kind of break down the sales barriers right off the bat, because you don't come out and say, you know, I've just found a product that you've absolutely got to try.
Mm-hmm.
You come in and describe what was the problem that you had originally, you know, and how did that work, and how did you, you know, you went out on a search and you tried, you know, three or four different products and nothing was really doing it, and suddenly you landed on product X, and here's what happened for you. And it's one of those things where by the time the person gets down to the end of the message and they actually you actually put in your small sales pitch, they're more willing to look at, oh, what has this guy actually found? I've got to find out exactly what he's done. And you've broken down all the sales barriers that people originally have as soon as they open an email that they don't want to be sold to. Nobody wants to be sold to.
Yeah.
So at the same time that you're giving them, you know, quality information, you're bringing them over to your side of the table to eventually to make an easier sale.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were talking, I just went through, I'm working on a brand new website. I kind of hesitate because it's a website / article, it's going to be a press release, it's going to be, I'm going to turn it into everything. And I just wrote the copy for it last night. And it works. It's exactly this slippery slope that I'll be putting it into messages and everything. And did you want me to go ahead and read it?
Sure, go ahead.
What I've done, and this is just a one-page everything. And I like to leverage my time. So I don't have a lot of time to spend developing a website, then developing articles and developing messages. So I really try to leverage everything that I do. So
mm-hmm.
What I've done is I've developed a one-page article, which is going to be the index page for the website. I'll base press releases on it. I'll send it out as solo ads in e-zines. What else? I don't know. Anything I can come up with, I'll post it on the website, on other websites and that kind of stuff. So it really acts to leverage my time. And what it is, just so you have a little bit of background so you know what it is first, it's a domain registration company which registers the .ws, which is an alternative to .com.
Yeah.
And here's what I've done, and this is an example of the actual it's not 100%. You know, I haven't gone through and done the editing, but this is exactly what's going to be the index page as well as articles, and it also gives you an example of what I use or how I write my messages for my autoresponders.
Mm-hmm.
I just have to take a drink before I start off reading here.
Mm-hmm.
At the top, the headline is Internet Revolution Phase 2. Now, Fast and Furious hardly describes the pace of the Internet. On January 7th, 1998, there were 1,879,501 .com domain names. By January 16th, 2005, there was 33,351,738 registered .com domain names, with .com names being registered at a pace of 12,318 per day, your chance of getting the first choice domain name is about the same as winning the lottery. Phase 1 of the .com era is over. We're now entering phase 2. Internet domain registration can be compared to the toll-free 1-800 telephone number industry in the U.S. as toll-free numbers became the norm for all sizes of businesses, from mammoth multi-conglomerates right down to the mom-and-pop shop, the 1-800 prefix was soon exhausted. To meet the demand for toll-free telephone service, the telecom industry in the U.S. had to add 888, 877, and 866 in addition.